Have you ever noticed how difficult it is to give the decision making over to somebody else? Somebody that deciding for you, let somebody else do that deciding for you. You know how difficult that is? It's like keeping my mouth quiet while Carol's driving. Not that she's a bad driver, but I think I need to tell her sometime which way to go, don't I? Don't I do that? Sure. I try not to. There's times I just shh, be quiet. She will be fine. Things will go okay. And they do. They do. But it's difficult to give that decision-making over to somebody else, like letting somebody else drive. Or go to the restaurant. Some of you may go to the restaurant this afternoon after our services are over. And when you go into the restaurant, hand the menu to one of your friends and say, you order for me. Yeah, right. No, I don't think that's going to happen. We wouldn't let somebody else choose for us. And then when it comes down to health concerns, we really want to have some confidence in our doctor. We won't let the doctor make decisions for us, but we will listen to his advice. Unless, of course, you're getting an operation, they put you under, they're going to do what they want. So you better be sure and have confidence in that person. Know them. Know what they are capable of doing. Know for sure that they know what you want. Know for sure that they know what you like. Once that's done, then it's easier to give the decisions over. Carol will say, I'm going to go to this restaurant or that restaurant and bring something back. What do you want? I said, surprise me. She never brings back anything that's disgusting to me because I trust her and she knows what I like. So sometimes it's not difficult to give that decision-making process over to other people if we understand that that person we're giving that ability over to then knows us. Knows what we need, knows what we like, and it's not so bad. But then again, on the other hand, we think we're the ones that make the decisions best for ourselves, right? Sure. But have you ever made a bad decision? Said something like, boy, I'm never going to eat that again. Well, you made a bad decision. You made a bad choice, now you're paying for it. Or, I'm never going to buy a car like that. I'll never buy that item. I wished I hadn't have bought that. You see, we do make bad choices for ourselves. But we don't feel so bad when we make the choices and they turn out bad as if somebody else made the choice and it turned out bad. Well, how are you going to blame yourself for a bad choice? But blaming somebody else, oh, that's pretty easy. We can get into that. So, I want to take this from the realm of personal preferences, because we all have personal preferences. We all have our favorite colors. We all have our favorite food. We all have our favorite television programs, sports teams, movies, those kinds of things. I want to get from the realm of personal preferences to something more serious. And that is doing the will of God. Allowing God to make the choices for us. Doing the will of God and overcoming our flesh. I don't know if you've noticed this or not, like I have. I've lived long enough and had the kind of experience that taught me that I can't do it on my own. There's no way that I could be pleasing to God left to my own devices. It's just not going to happen. If we are left, or if I am left to my own devices, I usually will go for the easy way out of hard obedience. And I mean, when those decisions come and I have to choose for God, and to do that then means I'm going to have to do something that is unpleasant or that I would rather avoid. You see, that hard obedience. If I'm left to myself, I will take the easy way out. Anybody else do that? Oh, no. I'm the only one. I'm the only one that takes the easy way out, yeah. That's why I say we can't make it on our own. And maybe you can hear yourself say this. Maybe. Pay attention. Maybe you can hear yourself say something like, oh, no, 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 not me. I'll be faithful. Whatever God wants out of me, I'll do. We had that Sunday school class this morning about Samuel. Remember being a leader. And the very first thing that God directed him to do was something pretty scary, pretty difficult, pretty hard for a teenager, a young teenager at that, to go and talk to the priest and tell the priest that God's going to kill you and your sons because you've been unfaithful. Now, for a 14-year-old boy to go tell the priest that, it's kind of scary. But Samuel said, what do you want me to do? And he did it. So we might hear ourselves say, wait. Everybody else will be unfaithful, but not me. What I really appreciate, and it's humorous to me, talking about Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, that people would say, well, if I was back there, I would never have done that. I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have acted like Eve acted. I wouldn't have taken that apple and God said, don't. That fruit. You know what goes before a fall? Anybody know what goes before a fall? Pride goes before a fall. As soon as you stand up and say, I wouldn't do that, you already did. You already did. You already did. Pride goes before a fall. In my younger years, I was a runner, and I did a lot of running. And I had this idea that everybody else in the world needs to drink water while they run, not me. I don't need to drink water while I run. I can run for 15 miles and never have to drink a drop of water. And that's... No, wait a minute. That's when I'm leisurely running. But when I got into a 15-mile race, I don't know how much water I drank. You see, because all of a sudden, it wasn't so foolish. There's something about that competition that drives you to run a little bit harder. And I needed to drink water, even though I thought, for sure, everybody else does, but I don't need to. I'm special. You ever think of that? You ever put yourself in that I'm special category? Might be true for everybody else, but it isn't true for me. That's a terrible category to be in. I needed somebody to tell me, you need to drink water while you're running because you're going to dehydrate yourself and you're not going to be able to perform as well as you can. Drink some water. My comeback was, I drink water, that's just adding more weight to what I got to carry around. If I sweat, then I'm lighter. And I can run further. I was an idiot. What I needed was an expert for the running thing. Somebody that knew. Somebody could tell me what's up. We, each of us, in our Christian walk, need an expert as well, a professional, so to speak. Someone who really knows what it takes to overcome. Someone who knows exactly what it's like to face hard, difficult times and still remain obedient to God. We need that kind of a professional for our help. Because there's going to be hard times. No doubt about it in my mind. That's why we need Jesus. We need Jesus because He is our example. We need Jesus more than just a necklace or a bracelet or a cover on our Bible. We need Jesus in our lives because the tough times are going to come. And as much as we think, oh no, the tough times aren't going to get me, believe me, they'll get you. That's why we need Jesus. Look at Mark chapter 14, verse 27. Jesus said to His disciples, 12 of them, all of you will be made to stumble because of me tonight. Because it's written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep will be scattered. Jesus warned them. He was straightforward with them. He wasn't trying to sugarcoat things. He wasn't trying to deceive them and hope that they wouldn't notice that things would get tough. He came right out without any deceit and told them, all of you are going to be made to stumble tonight. And then when I read that, I thought, wait, what did Jesus say? All of you will be made to stumble tonight. Now the word stumble there is from a Greek word which is scandalizo. We've heard that before. Scandalize. Be offended at. Stumble over. This is something I just can't get over. I can't get around it. I can't look past it. You see. And Jesus said, all of you will be made to stumble. If I backed up a minute. Is he blaming something for their stumbling? Jesus is blaming something for their stumbling. He said, this is going to make you stumble. And I got to thinking that they were going to face something that was so horrendous that their faith would not be able to carry them beyond it. Jesus warned them that it was going to happen. You're going to face something tonight that you're not going to be able to deal with. As if Jesus is saying, you're going to face more than your faith can bear. And he quoted from Zechariah 13:7. Jesus knew what was happening. He knew what to expect. He knew things would get tough. Jesus knew things would get scary. He knew they would get deadly. And he was warning his disciples, it's going to come to the point where it's going to turn you away from me. So it's as dark as it gets. This is one of the reasons why we ought to love Jesus so much. As dark as it gets, he said in verse 28, that big three-letter word, but. But after I've been raised, I will go before you into Galilee. After I'm raised, you're going to see me get arrested tonight. You're going to see me get beaten up. You're going to see me get abused. You're going to see me get tortured. You're going to see me get nailed onto a cross. And you're going to watch me die. And it's going to be too much for you guys. You're going to run off and hide. But listen, after I'm raised, I'm going to go ahead of you into Galilee. It says, Psalm 30, verse 5, weeping endures for the night, but joy comes in the morning. Jesus said, it's going to be a tough night for you boys, but in the morning, we're going to get back together. And you're going to have joy that you've never thought could be experienced. Well, look at verse 29. And Peter said to him, oh, Jesus, you just sometimes say the funniest things. Everybody might forsake you. Everybody might stumble, but I'm not gonna. Not me. These other guys, just look at them. You can see it on their faces, Jesus. You can't trust them. But me, you can trust. You can trust. And Jesus said, wait a minute, Peter. I want to make this point perfectly clear to you there in verse 30, that today, even tonight, before the rooster crows, twice, you're going to deny me three times. So I'm thinking three times. Three times. Peter gives his professed belief, his professed faith. I will never leave you. That's what he's confessing. That's what he's professing. And Jesus said, no, you're going to deny me three times. Now, think about this three-time business once. Peter denies Jesus the first time. Maybe it snuck up on him and he didn't realize what was happening and he just fell into it and he wasn't really thinking the first time. Okay? It was a bad choice. Now, the second time comes along. The lesson is driven home down to the heart because now Peter has denied Jesus twice. There's no getting around it. The first time might have been, I wasn't looking. The second time, you can't say that. And now he does it the third time. There's a pattern. being generated in Peter's life. And this pattern is taking him away from Jesus, you see. And Jesus said, you're going to deny me three times. Against this, Peter turned angry in verse 31. And what is interesting to me is that he got angry. He wasn't repentant. He wasn't broken. He wasn't sorrowful. He got angry. What do you mean talking to me like that? Don't you know who I am? Don't you know what I'm capable of doing? I'm thinking Jesus is going, yeah, I do. That's why I said what I said. And Peter got angry. And I'm thinking, my own personal belief, but I'm thinking Peter knew exactly what Jesus was saying. That's why he got mad. I find in my experience that when a person gets angry, it is an interesting defense. Raising your voice, shouting, getting angry, being angry, especially when you're wrong, because if I'm right, I don't have to raise my voice. I will let the rightness of my argument rest. But if I know I'm wrong, or if I think I'm losing control, then I'm going to have to raise my voice to intimidate those people I'm facing to shut them up. That's why it says that he spoke the more vehemently. That means he shouted at Jesus on the angry side. If I have to die with you, I will not leave your side. I will not deny you. And then the rest of them picked up on this thing too and said, oh no, we won't either. We're not going to be scattered against all of this. They professed that they would remain faithful to Jesus. You got to love Mark's treatment of this material, because I don't think it could have come out any funnier. We're not going to leave you. We'll die for you. They're all saying this, remember? You look at verse 33. They came to a place which was named Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, set here while I pray. And he took Peter, James, and John with him, and he began to be troubled and deeply distressed. And then he said to them, my soul is exceedingly sorrowful even to death. Stay here and watch. Which included in that word watch means pray with me. Three of the closest disciples who said, we will die for you. Jesus said, come on over here, boys. Because I have trouble in my heart that is just wringing the life right out of me, and I got to pray. Will you pray with me? Sure, Jesus, we'll pray for you. We'll pray with you. Sure. Well, Jesus went off by himself there in verse 35, and he went a little further, and he fell down on the ground, and he prayed that if it were possible that the hour might pass from him, and he said, Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Take this cup, this mission that he was on, take this cup away from me. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will. In verse 37, he came back and he found his three friends that would die for him, die with him. He came back and he found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, he called them by the name Simon, are you sleeping? Could you not watch 1 hour? Couldn't you pray with me 1 hour? You're the guy who's willing to die for me. Can't give up an hour to pray for me. Don't you know what kind of an agony and struggle I'm facing here? Because they're going to come and kill me. You who said you'd die for me, profess that belief. Profess that faith. The Jesus was at a point of decision here. A hard decision needed to be made, because if he went along with it, it would have been hard obedience. And he prayed, if it is possible, Father, if you Father, can think of a way out of it, let that be the case. Nevertheless, it's not what I want, but it's what you want that counts. And Jesus prayed this way three times. Each time he returned to find his friends unable to pray with him. Those guys, wait a minute. Let's not just blame it on them. What about us? Are we able to pray with Jesus for an hour? It's not so funny when it's us. It's not so humorous when we bring it on home. He warned them about stumbling. They were not concerned about it. Me? Stumble? Oh no. That pride thing, and what goes before pride, or what comes after pride, is a great fall. Pride goes before the fall. He told them, prayer is the defense for stumbling. Pray so that you don't enter into temptation. He told them. Pray. You can't give in to temptation while you're praying. He said, the Spirit is willing. The Spirit is willing to make this profession of your faith, to make this profession of your obedience, to make this profession of your steadfastness to the Lord. The Spirit is willing to make it, but the flesh is weak. The flesh is unwilling to do what you say. It wants its own way. And when the easy way shows up, the flesh wants to take it. That's just the way it works. There's two responses to life's tests. There are tests in our life. These hard times come. It's like the storms of life. It's like being in the desert. It's like being in the dry places. It's like being in the pits. What are you going to do when you find yourself there? Complain or praise? You're going to turn from God or turn towards Him? You're going to submit to His will, or are you going to demand your own will? Here we have two responses to these kinds of tests that we face in life. The weak flesh dominates, and we abandon. We jump ship. When our weak flesh dominates our lives, we abandon Jesus for safety. This is getting too scary. This is getting too scary. I don't like scary things, so I'm going to just set Jesus aside here temporarily. I'll be back in a minute, Jesus. I got some of my own things to take care of. Or does the will of God dominate? When the will of God dominates our life, we should be willing to die. Maybe right now. And I tell you, we're all going to die. Like the guy said. You know, you heard that saying that if you got your health, you got everything? You heard that, right? Health is the one thing you can be guaranteed that you're going to lose. You are going to lose your health. Sooner or later, it's going to go and you're going to die. We all are. I didn't make it up. You've seen it. So our flesh can dominate, or God's will can dominate. The final outcome, the real outcome, is beyond death. The final outcome, the real outcome, comes at the resurrection. See, we can take a small view of life, see, and not see the eternal things. But when we take a broad view and see things in an eternal perspective, that changes how we make decisions every day. When we keep eternity in view, like Jesus did. He knew that this death and the torture and the difficulties that he was going to face was not the final thing. And he said, I want you to do it like I did. Here's how I overcame it. I remained faithful and obedient to the one who called me. You can do it too. We can do it.